A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the biggest stories in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
On this Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is edition of the series, La Liga kicks off in Spain, where the rain on the plane is falling on Barcelona and the parade of their new stars. Serie A kicks off in Italy, where dominoes have shut up shop, but Juve, Mourinho's Roma and Inter all want a pizza. The action. And how the seasonal battle lines are being drawn across Europe's big leagues by old-timers and new. And by the way, welcome to our new home on the Football Ramble feed. And if you're a new listener, here's a hint of what we're all about. Every week, we drill down into three stories from the continent with the best European football journalist and get to as many of your questions as possible. We always have space for a bit of dessert, too. And Andy and Nikki will round up the conversation with their recommendations of a game of the week for you to enjoy and a local food suggestion to go with it. Let's kick off with this tweet that I saw this morning, Andy. Reading any Barca article makes my head hurt. Make it make sense! You know what they're talking about? They're talking about the mess that Barca have got themselves into. How did they get themselves into a situation that they spend the summer signing up players, not least iconic players like Robert Lewandowski from Germany, and then we don't know, as the season begins, whether he'll get a game or not?
Yeah, time is ticking down until they play Rayo Vallecano at the Camp Nou this weekend. And yeah, we just simply don't know what team they're going to be able to put out, because they've not been able to register the new signings as stands, and it's going right to the wire now. So that's not only Robert Lewandowski, Rafinha. There's been the revelation in the last couple of days that Andreas Christensen and Frank Kessier, for example, who they signed after having such a brilliant season for Milan as they won the Scudetto, as Nikki will tell you, that Christensen and Kessier could walk away if they were not...
For free?
Yeah. If they were not registered for the start of the season. Now, there's been no suggestion yet that they're going to do that. Their agents are a bit twitchy and talking to the club, which I think you would understand. Now, clearly, Barcelona are juggling a lot of plates as teams do in the transfer window. The big change, really, this week has been that they've had a setback. David Cartledge has talked in recent weeks about the palancas, the economic levers that have been brought down to release new funding. Now, one of those was to sell 25% of the TV rights for the next 25 years. They were hoping to register €667 million on the balance sheet. The way they did it, though, is the hedge fund that were putting in the money and then created a new company. Barcelona put some of their own money in, €150 million of their money, and that was meant to be part of the money. So basically, they were giving their own money back to themselves. Now, La Liga have not unreasonably said, well, that's only 517 million euros because the 150 that you've put in is not new funding. And I think Joan Laporta, the president's statement, was La Liga have a different interpretation of it than us. That is one way of putting it. So not only is that not counted as new funding, which is blocking them from signing these new players because they don't have as much money as they want, it's created a 37.5 million euro tax bill. So clearly, Laporta's everything is fine, like he's a little dog in a pork pie hat, like drinking a cup of tea in a house that's on fire, is not quite being perceived in the way that he wants it to be, at the very least. Now, losing Christensen and Kessié would be a blow. We obviously that's a leap ahead. We don't know that's going to happen yet. But then does Lewandowski get twitchy? We've already heard Andrea Reazzani, the Leeds chairman, say, "Well, we're expecting money from the Rafinha sale soon, like at the start of September." Jules Koundé turned down Chelsea so he could go to Barcelona. So I feel that, never mind what they're like on the pitch, who are they actually going to have on the pitch this weekend? I think this tells us a lot already.
Yeah, I mean, I find all of this, I empathise with the person who wrote in, because there's actually so many layers to it to try to process. I mean, Andy's talked about selling sort of a big chunk of the future TV rights to a hedge fund, which in and of its own, on its own, I want to sort of take and sort of scrutinize for a second, because it's the next 25 years. So you're mortgaging your future for fixing this problem right now already. And that in itself sort of is a dynamic that makes me feel sort of very uneasy, because is this club sort of on a path towards saving more money in the future? No, it's not. It's doing the opposite. It's building towards a more expensive
future.
But that's
what football clubs do, Nikki.
They
stake the family silver on the season.
But for 25-year contracts. But I think that's different.
Yeah, and what's fascinating about this as well is, so Andy hasn't even got to this yet, but there's this situation with Frankie de Jong. Mm. Now, Frankie de Jong was signed under a previous ownership, well, previous president, presidency, sorry, not previous ownership of the club. The previous president, Bartomeu, persuaded de Jong to sign a contract extension whereby basically he brought his short-term wages down and then backloaded the wages. So those are now coming onto the wage bill, which is one of the many reasons why Barcelona haven't got enough money at the moment. And so now you have a situation where Barcelona are also, as I understand it, going to de Jong and not just asking him to reduce his wages. The initial gambit was, oh, this contract you've signed doesn't look very legal to us. We probably need to fix that. So turning it into his problem, which I think is both of those actions actually in a strange way speak to the same bigger issue almost of, if you run a football club in this way with these sort of regular elections, it is in the interest of the president who's there right now to find short-term solutions. Because if you find a short-term solution, then you're not there to deal with it later. It's someone else's fault, someone else's problem. And it feels like that just digs you a deeper and deeper hole. But right now, the hole feels pretty deep already.
You would have thought that they'd want to get rid of Frankie de Jong as soon as possible. He's had offers from Manchester United.
They have tried. They've tried.
But he's still hanging. And that's part of their problem, isn't it?
Yeah. And I can understand that he doesn't want to leave without the money. I mean, he was bought into the idea of playing for Barcelona anyway. You know, there's no doubt about that, because he could have gone to Paris Saint-Germain for more money in the first place when he left Ajax in 2019. But he chose to sign for Barcelona. Now, it must be, forget the money for a minute, it must be incredibly frustrating for him, because he's gone there with a dream of being the next great Dutch player at Barcelona. And in terms of on the pitch, I think you can look at it and think, who wouldn't want to play with these players? You know, never mind the morality of them not paying their bills and going out and having a shopping spree. Like, if you look at the actual players that were on the pitch, I would be thinking, I want to play with these guys, because he's not been able...
I'd embarrass myself. I wouldn't want to be on the pitch.
You know, we'll leave that bit out. I'll leave that bit out anyway. But I think you look at it and you think, okay, I've not played for the Barcelona that I've been sold in the first place. So he's had to play as a number 10. He's had to play as a number 6. He's done the Frank Lampard thing of bombing late into the penalty box and proved to be quite a good goal scorer from midfield, which I think actually when he arrives in the Premier League, that makes him great. Say if he arrives at Chelsea, he can do so many different roles that he couldn't do when he left Ajax. He's been pushed to do those roles because Barcelona are a shambles and he's had to make do. He's had to play a centre-back a couple of times as well. And he looked pretty accomplished there as well. We're talking about a top-class player who's going to get even better. So I think that's immensely frustrating for him. The problem all the way along, just to reiterate, is the fact that everyone in La Liga has a salary cap and is based on your incomings. Now, Barcelona can go backwards and say, well, the pandemic's negatively affected us. It's negatively affected everyone. You know, Real Madrid in recent years have not spent, have cut back. I mean, basically, they were saving up to have a pop at Mbappe, which, of course, didn't work, but they were able to buy Tchouaméni, a player that they really needed, like quite soon after that, because they have not gone crazy on the market, because they have tightened the belt, because obviously rebuilding the stadium has been part of that as well. But Barcelona have not looked at it this way. And Laporta's way has always been speculate to accumulate, build it and they will come. Let's get superstars in and that will create the opportunity for selling tickets and TV rights, of which I won't get all the money, sponsorships, etc., etc., etc.
Is the Kevin Costner of Spanish football then? But
it's not quite Waterworld yet. It's not far off though.
I wasn't talking of that Kevin Costner. Build it and they'll come, Kevin Costner.
Yes, I know.
Field of Dreams. I know you know.
I've just been a little bit mischievous there.
I know. But will selling Barcelona or Barca Studios, which is their in-house sort of production company, or 25% of it, their content production company, will that help at all?
Again, it's very short term. I mean, yes, it helps right now because you need to show La Liga that you've brought in X amount of money. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, which, you know, Andy was talking about selling those sort of 25% of the future rights. That was, as you said, one lever, and I think they've now pulled four economic levers. Mm. And another one of them is selling this share of the studios. And yes, in the short term, it helps. But in the long term, that's all revenue you're not getting, because that's all revenue you're giving up as a share. With all of these things, they're retaining control. There's nothing they're selling more than 49% of, and that's very important because you still retain control of it. But it does feel to me, as someone who has never had to try to do this creative accounting that international level football clubs seem to do nowadays.
I never thought I'd hear that from an Italian.
Right. It feels like they're building a house on sand, doesn't it? It feels like they're building a house on a foundation of sand.
What I think is the most remarkable thing of this, well, two remarkable things. Firstly, Sergio Busquets has been asked to take a pay cut again. he's taken more than one pay cut since the start of all this to try and fit people on the
unpaid internship for Sergio Busquets.
that's what Gerard Piquet reportedly offered this week. He said, I'll play for nothing.
Yeah.
And how has it got to that point? You know, one of the best defenders in the world over the last like 15 years has had to say, I'll play for free.
I mean, I find that sort of dynamic quite interesting because, you know, to sort of jump sports just for a second, and apologies for everyone who will be annoyed about jumping sports, but one of the most famous athletes of my lifetime is Tom Brady, who won the most Super Bowls of any quarterback in the NFL ever. And he never got paid like some of his peers did. Like he always sort of, he was paid well, he was never paid badly, but he always was sort of saying, I'll take a little bit less than say Peyton Manning or whoever else, because I want the money to go to the rest of the team because you've got a salary cap. And so
it's
I want
like
to
the Dwayne Wade discount at Miami. Exactly.
Right. And, yep. and I think that sort of mindset fits at a club like Barcelona, who have this sort of mindset of, well, we'll just win. We just want to win. But yeah, that doesn't, as a greater strategy, it has flaws.
So, of course, it's not just a Barca problem, even though Andy has talked about Real Madrid having their house in better order. Actually, it's a wider problem in La Liga, isn't it? And this is the point that David reminds us of on Twitter, or at least asked the question, why have so many other La Liga clubs still not registered new signings? From what I've read, Betis are doing Oliva, and Atletico had to ask Lamar to reduce wages to register players this goes beyond Barca, doesn't it?
It does, although not to the same extent, obviously. The Atletico point is a really interesting one because Barcelona's crisis has overshadowed the fact that Atletico have been dangerously close to the cap with a huge wage bill for a really long time. And obviously they don't have the same commercial potential as Barcelona. Now, the Lamar thing's a little bit different because he was out of contract in 2023. They have given him a longer contract extension than he might have expected and spreading the money over that. So that is the sort of thing that Barcelona have been doing. And clearly, one of the biggest problems for Atletico is they have got... And the problem at Betis is they have like God's own midfield. It's magnificent. But if players do well for you, you have to pay them. You have to give them a raise. And that is an issue. Again, they're not as commercially exploitable as Barcelona or Real Madrid. But with Atletico, their biggest problem has been the guys who come back. So you've got Saul, huge earner, come back from a loan. No obvious move for him yet. Alvaro Morata has come back. We've all assumed, Nicky, that he was going to go to Juventus. But no, in the ultimate little transfer window twist, in the final friendly, bit before we go back to La Liga and Serie A, Morata's been playing for Atletico in pre-season, looking pretty good, linking very well with João Félix, scorer of a hat-trick in the final friendly last weekend against Juventus. Yeah. What better advertising is there?
Right, it's like direct marketing, like, you know how social media apps now all like find their way of like telling you exactly what you want. They're like, okay, we've found the algorithm. Juventus want Morata, we'll show him. No, I mean, it's ridiculous. And I actually saw someone else speaking social media, someone had a poll up the other day, which was the toughest quiz in football, and it was, who does Alvaro Morata play for now? And the Atletico Madrid or Juventus are two choices you've got. Look, it is weird because Juventus want him. Juventus tried to make a deal with Atletico at the end of his loan deal because there was an option to buy. The fee, I can't remember what it was, I think it was around 30 million euros, was higher than Juventus wanted to spend. So Juventus said, can we negotiate it down? Atletico said no. And now you end up with Atletico, who don't want him but weren't willing to go down on price. Juventus, who do want him but aren't willing to come up to them. And I think probably now they've just gone and signed Filip Kostic. That's off the table. Yeah, poor Alvaro Morata, who has had this odd career where it's never quite stuck for him anywhere. Must feel a bit frustrated and deflated, but obviously it didn't stop him from banging a hat-trick against them anyway.
Just a reminder that you can get in touch with us anytime during the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotton Adebayo, at Andy Brassel, and at Nicky Bandini.
El internacional alemán Militao ahí saliendo de la presión de Jordi Alba, tocando para Lucas, la devolución, cuidado a la pérdida. Llega Rafinha, ¡qué golazo! ¡Gol!
Let's move on to Serie A, even though Andy's already besmirched the integrity of Italian creative accountancy.
Or some would say I've applauded it.
Who would say that? Jose Mourinho has been leading Roma, of course, over the last couple of seasons, and he's been spending this summer like this season belongs to them. I can almost see Jose thinking that and saying that. The usual suspects are there, of course, Juve, Inter, Milan as well. Jose, could he be the upsetter this season or not?
I have already, and I will regret this, I've already gone on record saying that Roma are my dark horse this season. I don't think it's impossible. And I can't tell. I'll acknowledge this. We all of us are guilty sometimes of getting swept up in the moment. And maybe I am getting swept up in the moment because it does happen to all of us. But I think that the narrative around this team right now is very compelling. For one thing, you can certainly say that enthusiasm that they bought by winning the Europa Conference League. And I know people roll their eyes at it and people have always rolled their eyes at it. But the atmosphere that's generated in Rome around the club, the difference in the mentality of the fans towards the club from 2 years ago, and the feeling of the players themselves is really, really high right now. And you can scoff at it, but it's real. And then you get this manifestation of that, which was very visible, which was the signing of Paulo Dybala and nearly 10,000 fans coming out to see him. You could see Dybala was sort of physically looked quite shocked by it and sitting there and taking it all in, this scene of his unveiling. And they've had a strong summer. It isn't just Dybala they brought in. They brought in Georgina Wijnaldum, which I think is a really, really interesting signing, because perhaps I would have looked at that midfield and thought you're missing something, you're missing that sort of player. They have so far not really sold anything particularly meaningful. They've cleared out some dead wood, they've cleared out some big wages. And you start to look at the front part of that team and you say, okay, Mkhitaryan's gone. That's the one sort of biggest names, I guess you could say, has gone. But again, big wages out of the way.
He never got on with Mourinho anyway.
Well, they did all right together last season, okay. But historically they haven't had perfect relationships. Move him out of the way and you've got an attack potentially of Tammy Abraham, obviously, who had a fantastic first season in Rome, supported by Lorenzo Pellegrini, who is a brilliant, very sort of important member of the Italian national team now and the club captain, and who played very well last season. You add into that Dybala, who has been mercurial, has been frustrating, but was Serie A's MVP, 2 years ago? And is capable of things that are quite special. And then you've got Zaniolo, who again, sometimes frustrating, sometimes not everything that everyone hoped he was going to become yet, but he's had injuries. And that's a four-man attack that you put in front of a midfield featuring Wijnaldum and Cristante. And I don't know, most of that looks pretty solid to me. I'm worried about the defence still. I question whether or not Mourinho is the guy who makes magic with this group of attackers. But there have been some flashes in pre-season. And I think what I'm sort of struggling to weigh correctly, and I think this is the tricky part, is no question in my mind, this is not the strongest starting 11 in Serie A. So it just isn't. Inter, Milan, definitely stronger. Juventus, definitely stronger as well, actually. But they've all got, none of these teams is runaway. Like there's teams I think are better, teams I think are worse, but none of them is runaway from everyone else right now. And what Roma have the potential to have is that Mourinho chip on their shoulder, that attitude, that sense of us against the world. And I think Dybala is the key to that, because Dybala did not want to leave Juventus. Dybala has fought tooth and nail not to leave Juventus, frankly. He had Manchester United and Tottenham offers the last few years, always turned them down, always rejected, even when there was more money on the table. He wanted to do his thing at Juventus. He wanted them to pay him like he thought he was worth. He wanted to do all these things. Juventus moved on from him. And of course, Dybala, again, big issue for him was staying healthy a lot of the time. It just rings so familiar to me of stories like Samuel Eto'o, Wesley Schneider, when they went to Inter, players who had been discarded by big clubs, bigger clubs, and arrive with that mentality of, I've got something to prove. Is Dybala that sort of character? Is he that sort of mindset? I don't know. But if he's ever going to do it in his career, he's the right age. He's got a manager who's told him, all right, I believe in you. We're going to make it about you. I think there's something in it, but also it's Mourinho. Maybe in a month's time, it will all have unraveled and I'll look like an idiot.
He's the better football clique than any of those other teams he's got linked with.
Yeah.
I think at Roma, it's the best on-pitch clique. I just think him and Abraham are going to be really great together. Mm. I think he's a much more suitable feeder of Abraham than we've had before. I agree about the defence, definitely. Although I think Matic, actually, who's not been talked about that much,
that
was a player they were really missing last season. I think that defensive midfielder. So maybe that's a help in the right direction. Zeki Celik.
Is he the same Matic, do you reckon? From Chelsea to Man United, he seemed to have dropped in form.
I agree. And I think what we have to bear in mind at the moment is Manchester United is this strange talent vortex. No one can reach their best form at Manchester United. I think you look at like Chris Smalling, Lukaku, who've succeeded in Serie A after just really going sideways at Manchester United, if we're talking about it in a Serie A context. Zeki Celik is an absolute upgrade at right back as well. Really low-key, good signing. I guess my questions, like going forward with Roma, what do they do with Zaniolo? Do they keep him or sell him? And if he stays, what do they do with him? Because everyone wants him to be amazing. Mm. He's not quite the player he could have been yet, I think it's fair to say. The other question is, you're talking about Pellegrini, how he's one of the best midfielders in Serie A, which I would totally agree with, how important he is to the national team. How, It was his team before, and now if everything works, it's Dybala's. So how do you fit the two of them together?
This is absolutely the open question, is how does that attack all work together? Because I think there's all sorts of sort of fantasy land thinking going on right now amongst Roma fans of all four of those players on the pitch together, right? Of Dybala and Dybala and Zaniolo and Pellegrini all behind Abraham in, like, I guess a 4-2-3-1 or something. Does that work? It definitely doesn't feel very Mourinho.
It doesn't.
And then how do you construct your midfield? Because I do think the strength of that midfield, and yeah, thank you for bringing up Matic as well, because I think you're right, needed that sort of muscle in there. But you've actually got quite nice variety between Wijnaldum and Cristante and Matic in terms of what they offer you. I like that midfield platform of three, but if you're doing that, then you can't have another four players in front, because, you know, where's the balance of the team? What's the defence going to look like? Tactically, there's big questions. And I do slightly sort of look at this group right now and imagine that the starting 11, it's going to be Zaniolo as the odd man out. And that's going to be hard for Mourinho to justify if, as it appears, he's just told the board, no, don't sell this player for 55 million to Tottenham. Don't bring in that money, because Roma do need to bring in money as well still. This is the same conversation that was happening in the Spain section and the same conversation that's happening in every section. I think everyone's got their sort of COVID balance sheet to fix at the moment. There's their post-pandemic losses to fix. And Zaniolo was the obvious sellable piece in that group. And the fact that Mourinho said no is interesting. I think it speaks to classic Mourinho, who always wants to have squad depth, always wants to have almost ideally his two full teams. Can Roma afford to do that? Will Zaniolo tolerate it? Bear in mind that all through last season, this was a battle Mourinho had with the press right from the first day he arrived. You guys talk about Zaniolo too much, he would tell the reporters, and then he would create scenarios to talk about him. So it's going to be a thing that gets talked about. It's going to be a fascinating question, but on paper, it's tantalising.
You'd have thought that Juve, of all the top teams in Serie A, were the ones that have had the most interesting summer window so far. Brought in five new signings, of course. I suppose marquee names like Paul Pogba, Federico Chiesa. You're not going to get much better than Angel Di Maria, etc. And yet there are so many moving parts amongst that squad that you wonder how they're going to make it work. Paul Pogba, currently injured, amongst other things. Are they realistic title contenders, where they want to be after winning nine consecutive Serie A titles, but in the last couple of seasons they've only come fourth? Are they realistic contenders this time around?
Yeah, Chiesa already there, of course. They've sort of been doing that in a structured deal with Bitstrupe over time, but Chiesa and Pogba are almost the great questions I have with this team. Max Allegri, the manager, has said they have a duty to win Serie A. It, of course, was the thing they did. They won 9 years in a row, and that very much that era that Juventus went through where they just kept winning fit into the narrative and the story they tell themselves about the old sort of President Boniperti saying that winning isn't important, it's the only thing that counts. It's the Juventus mantra is, you know, that. It's just win. And I personally, I'm struggling to see them doing it. Maybe I'm being too sort of pessimistic for them, but okay, you go out and sign Paul Pogba. So much enthusiasm around that. I was excited about seeing how that would sort of, whether that could rejuvenate him. Obviously, he's not had the best time at Manchester United in general, but especially the last bit has felt pretty bleak. And he's hooking back up with a manager who he had a great rapport with. I mean, Allegri and Paul Pogba sort of would, in these viral videos, in their time together in Juventus last time, they'd wind each other up, they'd stay after training and have shooting contests. They really seemed to twig with each other. And that was exciting. But then immediately Paul Pogba, who's missed 80 games the last three seasons, tears the meniscus in his knee, and you think, okay, well, is Paul Pogba going to be on the pitch very much? Chiesa, who isn't a new signing, but certainly they were hoping to have him back and get that new signing feel, he's still recovering from a cruciate ligament tear. Allegri said we'll have him back at 100% in January. So that's half a season without that still. So suddenly some of that enthusiasm that you generate starts to dissipate a bit. Now, when I take a step back, there are still some things that are very good. I think Di Maria has got things to contribute, still at 34 years old, and I think he'll fit on the left of that attack and give them something they didn't have, especially while Chiesa's out, it gives them another option. Gleison Bremer at centre-back had a fantastic season at Torino. I mean, really like putting all of the best strikers in Serie A in his pocket. Sensational signing, I think. But he is filling the gap of Chiellini and Matthijs de Ligt. Now, Chiellini, of course, played less and less, but still, that's some pretty big shoes to step into. They've just, I don't actually know at the time recording if it's gone through yet, but it looks very much like they're going to get the deal across the line for Filip Kostic. I think that's a nice signing, someone who can slot into the left of midfield as well while Pogba's not there and potentially play in the attack later on.
But, yeah, he's like, I suppose he's like Cuadrado for the other side.
Yeah.
Isn't he? That's the idea.
Yes, exactly. That versatility, you can use
what
him pretty much anywhere
mean
up and down
for
the
those
flank.
Of us who don't get the reference there?
Like he's a winger who's become a wing back. Mm-hmm. Incredibly energetic, very creative, and those positions I think are so key to a team like Juventus.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Like you can pretty much use him anywhere on the left hand side, and I think Juventus need that option or they'll value it. But I just, when I look at the sort of the team, I think the reason that I think the Pogba absence at the beginning feels so weighty. You guys know this because you've watched Juventus in the last couple of years as well. Sometimes in the last few years, it has felt like the midfield of that team is just where football goes to die. Like it goes into that midfield and then nothing happens. Like it just disappears there. And that's why potentially moving on Adrian Rabiot feels great to a lot of Juventus fans. Because, I mean, this is a player who played 32 games last season and had two assists and no goals. I mean, that's what I mean. When football goes to die, nothing happens. These good players, nothing happens.
I guess my question, Nicky, is I think there are two questions. Firstly, is he the player to reconstitute that midfield, or is he a player to be a good part of an already well-performing midfield, which he has been at Juventus in the past? I think, and it is a huge area of, like, I guess it's like a building site for them, and it has been for a long time. I guess the other question with Pogba, the injury is the nightmare scenario, really, isn't it? Because when he originally got this meniscus injury, there was the question of, is he going to miss it? Is he going to miss the World Cup? Is he going to have an operation which will keep him out for 4 months? And they've gone for the option of a more conservative treatment so he can play in the World Cup. Is this denying reality? Is this meaning France don't get the best version of him at the World Cup? But in the importance of this discussion that we're having, are Juventus getting a half version of Paul Pogba for this first half of the season?
Yeah, if you know, when he's there at all. I think reconstituting the midfield is overstating it, but certainly this has not been a good midfield. I think it's been a real weakness for Juventus, and they did need to address it. And what he offered, in my mind, was that box-to-box spark, effectively. That's certainly what he was last time he was at Juventus. Yeah, he can play a long pass sometimes. He's actually got great range as a
game changer, arguably.
But exactly, he's someone who wakes up a game, who makes things happen, even in this sort of difficult, not impressive times at Manchester United. You look at his assist numbers, you look at his chances created, they're not nothing. So he was giving something, because at the moment you've got Manuel Locatelli, who in my opinion actually is also better as a box-to-box midfielder, has been crowbarred into this regista role because he's better at it than anyone else. You've got Rabiot, who none of us even really understand what he does a lot of the time. You've got Weston McKennie, who's all energy, but I think still lacks that finesse, has never really taken his game onto that level, I think, in terms of finesse. And then you've got some options, you know, Nicolò Fagioli, who's coming back to the club after playing in Serie B last season. Maybe he'll turn out to be something good. There's a real lack of identity in that midfield. And I think Paul Pogba, more than anything, to me, was an attempt to reclaim some identity. Okay, here's someone who we will look to, who will do things, who will bring something, just something to this midfield. And I think losing that's big.
If I put you on the spot, who do you think finishes higher out of Roma and Juventus?
That's a really difficult question, because I still think Juventus's team is probably better when I go through it on paper. I mean, Dusan Vlahovic has been there 6 months now. He should be better. Di Maria, as I said, will contribute something to the attack. I think that, do you know what I think the answer to that is, Andy? I think if I have to say who I think is more likely, you know, which way are we weighting the coin to finish above the other, I think it's Juventus. Which one do I think is more likely to win the league? I actually think I might pick Roma.
Right.
Because if Roma hit their sort of peak performance, I could see it being really good. Whereas Juventus at the moment, I'm struggling. I think there's no chance Juventus will miss the top four. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think there's a chance that Roma could implode and miss the top four.
Do you think part of the reason that you think Juventus won't miss the top four is because of what's happening at Napoli?
Because this is a question, by the way, that Andrew has sent us on Twitter. How big a challenge will it be for Napoli to finish top four again this season with all the recent departures of big-name players there?
It's a great question also. I mean, I feel like even as I'm recording, maybe their transfer business would have changed because they've left it late in terms of fixing some of their problems. They have sold this summer, or sold or said goodbye to, actually mostly ending contracts, their club captain, Lorenzo Insigne, their deputy captain, Kalidou Koulibaly, who I think lots of people felt in many ways acted as a real captain, certainly in terms of leadership on the pitch, really sort of crucial player. And again, I feel like this is a statistic I've repeated a lot recently, but if you look at the points per game Napoli got when Koulibaly was on the pitch or not, something like a 0.8 point difference. So transformatively good player that Chelsea have signed. And then you've lost Dries Mertens, who I think was probably more, even than Insigne, the Neapolitan kid. Mertens was the player the fans related to. Mertens was the guy who loved Naples, who the fans had adopted and made their own.
That goodbye video broke my heart.
It didn't it?
And he called his son Ciro.
Oh, yeah. Which is the nickname that the fans have already given Dries. So, yeah, that'll make life confusing. But, yeah, it's the end of an era in Naples. And do you know what? Fine. Eras need to end sometimes. And especially Mertens and Insigne, you could make a case, are they still producing at the levels they were under Sarri, under Benitez? No, I think things have moved on. But what are you replacing it with? And the answer is sort of so far, not that much. What are you replacing Koulibaly with? Again, so far, not that much. There's a lot of last minute sort of transfer talk around names like to reinforce your tech, like Giovanni Simeone. I'd be interested to see Simeone get his chance at a bigger club. I think he has earned it with last season's performances. But do I believe this team's going to be better? No, they finished third last season and the fans are so angry right now. It's the opposite end of the spectrum from Roma, where it feels like the mood will drag this club down even further. And I think they're going to miss the top four this season.
So is it anger with De Laurentiis specifically? Because to me, it feels like not just the departure of the players, but the way that he's handled it and not really acknowledge what those guys have done for the club.
Yeah, except for Insigne, who got a trophy that was even bigger than he is. I agree. There's always been an odd relationship between De Laurentiis, the owner, and the fan base in Naples, because De Laurentiis, who is a character who often says things that can range from aggravating to repulsive sometimes, in my opinion, nevertheless has, from a business standpoint, I think, run quite a sort of impressively tight ship at Napoli. You know, he's one of the few owners who's made sure that the club, his club, isn't losing money, isn't trying to go a Barcelona route of spending what it hasn't got. And that on its own had created some friction. I think there were some fans who've always felt, as football fans always do, no, you should be trying harder to win. You should be putting your hand in your pocket and making that last push to make us win. So there was already that tension that existed between them. I think that right now that has gone further to sort of outright anger, that you're not respecting these players and what they mean to us as well as to the club. You're not making enough an effort to fix what it means on the pitch for them leaving. There was, you know, not just De Laurentiis, frankly, Spalletti, the manager, has dealt with quite open sort of confrontations with fans this summer because they're accusing the whole club of being asleep, basically, of sleepwalking into an absolute mess. And yes, I think De Laurentiis is very, very unpopular in amongst the fan base right now. But as I said, he's often not been that popular even when things have been better.
Ancora Fabian Ruiz con il sinistro. Fabian Ruiz, è un gol fantastico. Il Napoli è un vantaggio grazie alla perla di Fabian Ruiz.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
From what you've been saying, Nicky, the Italian league is one to keep an eye on all this season. But at the moment, Andy, the Bundesliga seems to be the league to look at how the other leagues will set up because of what's happening there. The return of Timo Werner, for example, to Leipzig has all sorts of consequences, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think if we're looking at the way that... with the leagues that have started, particularly with the Bundesliga and Liga, and the way in which... They're looking to go forward in terms of attacking change. I think that's quite interesting. Leipzig bringing back Timo Werner is huge news. I think huge news in terms of not just where this season is going, but where they're going forward. Because Leipzig have had a little bit of a departure in terms of the way that they're doing business. Because they spent nearly 30 mil on David Raum, the self-proclaimed most important signing of the summer. I mean, it's big talk from a left wing back, let's face it. I know he's in the Germany team now, but they signed him, Hoffenheim, on a free from Greuther Fürth last season. So it's big. There's no doubt about it. Also, it means they've got a nice little deal. Hoffenheim are getting Angelino coming back the other way because he's still a good player. But Werner is the big one. Because with Raum, but especially with Werner, that's a win now signing. When have Leipzig made that sort of signing before? Never. That they've signed these guys who they think are the stars of tomorrow. I mean, holding on to Christopher Nkunku, the Bundesliga player of the season. That's right, officially the Bundesliga player of the season. 34 goals last season, even though he's only just becoming an attacker. He's almost in a sort of Dries Mertens situation, you know, a very, very attractive wide player who didn't look like he had the characteristics for a centre forward, who is now playing in that position because he's so convincing, and it proves that there are different ways to skin a cat. He'll go next summer. So Werner is there for the short, the medium and the long term because they have signed him on this permanent deal. We already know he can be really successful at Leipzig. They've signed another very interesting attacking piece this week for the start of next season. Benjamin Šeško, this striker who's been following in the footsteps of Erling Haaland, not in terms of the volume of goals he's scored, but at 19 years old, I would say he's a better all-round player than Haaland was at the same age. He can dribble round players. He's got great acceleration, although not quite the same raw pace as Haaland. Better at bringing other players into the game, better at creating his own shot. And to think that, you know, Leipzig have stolen him away from Manchester United and Chelsea and the other teams that were interested in Šeško. I think United have really missed out on one there. He's going to be brilliant there. But the fact that Šeško is coming next year suggests that Nkunku will be on his way next year, possibly to one of the giants of the Premier League, possibly even back to Paris Saint-Germain. These signings, bringing on board Werner particularly, is saying Leipzig want to reach that next level. They want to break through that self-imposed ceiling of only getting young players. And I think we've seen another win now striker signing this week in the Bundesliga, with obviously Sebastian Haller trying to recover from testicular cancer at the moment. Just arrived at Dortmund. They needed to get someone to replace him when they knew he'd be out for a number of months. They couldn't spend that amount of money. They couldn't spend 30 million euros all over again. They brought in Anthony Modeste, who's coming up to 34, who had a brilliant season last season with Cologne. And it's basically a very expensive short-term loan. But they feel that because he ticks all the boxes, proven in the Bundesliga, speaks great German, understands the game over there, in brilliant form at the moment off the back of last season, and really importantly, unlike all these other players that were linked to them, like Memphis Depay, et cetera, is the sort of player, Luis Suarez was offered to them as well. Modeste is the sort of player who can bring other players into the game and take the physical load in the number nine position in the way that Haller could. So the interesting thing is how Haller has been saying, you know what, I'm here not just to fulfill my own ambitions of playing in the Champions League for the first time, earning 6 million euros a year on a one-year contract as well, which must be an ambition. I am there to show the way to 17-year-old Youssouf Moukoko. I'm like there to be his big brother, which I think is pretty good.
I think there's something in that as well. Like, as you look at, and I'm just thinking about Milan and, of course, the last couple of years bringing Ibrahimovic and then Giroud and how sort of impactful they both were, not just in what they contributed on the pitch. I think
it's done so much for Leao, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Ibrahimovic certainly sort of, you listen to any of the young players there, and despite his reputation, they've all talked about how helpful he's been as someone just to talk to. And Giroud, maybe still someone to talk to, I'm sure, as well, but maybe his sort of almost the practical part with him of just in the biggest games having that coolness about him and scoring some really important goals. I think there's been something ongoing for a few years in Europe where obviously it's not the formula for everyone, of course. It's not necessarily the formula if you're Man City trying to win everything. But I think there's a growing number of sort of mid-30s forwards who are contributing quite a lot, I think. So it can be a successful formula for sure.
I guess the question is, will Lewandowski be allowed to do that this weekend? Will he be registered? In the meantime, Bayern doing brilliantly without him. Now, we always said, Don, didn't we, that they wouldn't seek to, Bayern would not seek to directly replace Lewandowski. And they haven't. I mean, I think in time, that's maybe Serge Gnabry as the centre part of a three. The way they've done it in the opening two games, so the Super Cup, when they put five past Leipzig, last Friday, the first Bundesliga game, where they put six past Eintracht Frankfurt on their own pitch, not played a home game yet, scored 11 goals in two games without Lewandowski, is they've done it as a two. So they've had two up front in Serge Gnabry, Sadio Mane. It has looked unbelievable. So potent. That doesn't mean they'll blaze through the back end of the Champions League. You know, that they need some defensive chops to do that. And from what I can see early on, Nagelsmann's not really interested in that. he talked about strengthening his defence. He's brought in De Ligt, who's been on the bench for the two games so far. It's like, well, it's all a bit, look, we're going back to David Cartledge last week. It's Keegan's Newcastle, but in German form, really. But it's wonderful to watch.
Talking of the Champions League, which is the ultimate goal, you know, maybe not for one or two coaches, but for most football fans across the continent, Paris Saint-Germain, PSG, have been knocking at the door of the title for a few seasons now, seem to be finding the click between Neymar and Messi that they hoped for at the time. Are they now realistic contenders for certainly for a Champions League final, I'd have thought?
I mean, I think they've been realistic contenders for a few years. They've been getting to the latter stages, and in the end, in the latter stages, you need those breaks to go your way. And I think the biggest reason for me that they're going to be a contender probably is still more the third name, Mbappe, more than Neymar or Messi at this point in their careers. But I'm very reluctant to get carried away with preseason games. I think people do that every year, and every year a lot of it gets proved to be absolute nonsense. But I think that it makes sense, and I think it's certainly... I find it conflicting with PSG because the business side of things makes them a bit sort of gross to want good things for. But, sorry PSG fans, but that trio wanting to see what it could become, it's exciting.
It's interesting that their spending policy has moved on to from Brewster's Millions to Dad planning for a camping weekend. I think that's the difference. I mean, the as far as the top line, those first two games in the Trophée des Champions, the Super Cup, and now the opener against Clermont in the league where they won 5-0. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Clermont. Yeah. Who are one of the favourites for relegation, particularly as four go down this season. I'll be astonished if they don't go down.
Sure, why are four going down this season?
Because they're shrinking Ligue 1 to 18 teams. So that means four go down and two go up and there's no playoff. So, yeah, it'll be hard work for them to stay out of the bottom four, Clermont. I mean, obviously, it's beautiful when you see the click between Messi and Neymar on YouTube or your preferred viewing platform. I think that there are two big questions. Firstly, how do they work together when Mbappe's back? Because Mbappe's been nursing a minor hamstring injury. When he comes back, as Nicky says, it's his team. Mm. You know, at the moment, they're having super fun, but it does still feel like pre-season. Neymar being invested is very interesting. Maybe he feels that it's obviously they're both motivated by the Cup, World Cup, him and Messi. But at the moment, Neymar is doing stuff like covering his fullback when he goes forward. It's easy to forget with all the stuff that's said about Neymar. When he's fully invested, there are a few more hardworking players on the pitch. Is that going to be the same when Mbappe comes back and he's conducting the orchestra? I think that's the question. The other thing is when we're talking about those sensible signings, you look at the arrivals of Renato Sanchez, Vitinha, who's been brilliant so far, Fabian Ruiz, who's just coming over from Napoli. Those are the sensible signings who are going to get them through the back end of the Champions League. So we're all having our end of summer. It's never going to end at the moment. That's not the reality of what's going to get them closer to the Champions League, if that's where they're
going. Milan Skriniar as well. That hasn't happened, but they're pushing for a centre-back and would be another nice addition, I think.
Olivia Newton-John did tell us that summer would end at some point. So on that note, let's get a game of the week from either of you. Nikki, first of all.
Right. I'm going to annoy everyone by picking a smaller set of clubs, but I think I'm intrigued by this game on the opening weekend of Serie A season. It's the opening weekend of the Serie A season, Dotton, so every game is going to be a treat. But Monza playing in Serie A for the first time, owned by Silvio Berlusconi and Adriano Galliani is his right-hand man. Same combination that led Milan to, I think, 29 titles but in 30 years.
Did he not used to own Milan?
Yes, Berlusconi sold Milan.
So he's gone from Milan to Monza?
Yes, and they've gone from Serie D to Serie A in just over 4 years, so 5 years. So yes, it's one of those teams that I'm curious about because it's been a journey, because it's characters who are used to seeing in a very different context. But of course, what's also more interesting is the team that gets put together on the pitch. And of course, as you would expect with those two, pockets don't run quite as deep for Berlusconi as they did when he was at Milan and signing the best players in the world. But he signed players who you wouldn't expect a team coming up from Serie B that's been on such a sharp rise to sign. So talking about Stefano Sensi going straight into team Pessina from Atalanta, I think is a real coup as well. I think Andrea Patania is close to joining there as well. Gianluca Caprari going to be in the attack. There's a lot of players you would not expect to see congregating in a team that's just come up. They're going to play against Torino, who've lost one of their sort of, well, their single most important pillar, I would say, in Bremer, who went to Juventus at centre-back, but nevertheless have been a really upwardly mobile team, playing brilliant football under Ivan Juric the last couple of seasons.
No Belotti, though.
But no Belotti, who could also end up at Roma, by the way. It's another one that's been linked recently, if that attack didn't have enough pieces to fit in. So yes, I'm excited about Monza and Torino. And am I supposed to give a food as well?
Of course, yeah. We can't watch the game without eating, can we?
We can't. So lots of people, and in fact, I've probably even talked about it at some point on this show, know about risotto alla Milanese, which is Milanese risotto. Monza is also in Lombardy. It's not far away, but they have their own take on it, the risotto monzese, which is still the same saffron risotto rice, which is delicious anyway, but they have a special sort of local sausage that goes into it as well, which just takes it up another notch. So risotto monzese to start the season, I reckon.
That's, you're going to have to compete with that, Andy.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I was going to say, Monza, who are they? But It's offer me something better.
Well, I'm going to offer you something from the second weekend of the Bundesliga. Now, obviously, Schalke have just come up to the top flight, back to the top flight, rebuilding their reputation. They're already lightly sledged by one of Dortmund's new signings this weekend. Nico Schlotterbeck did a fan forum. And the game they have on Saturday at 6:30 local time, they're always called the Topspiel, the big game of the weekend. And
I know a bit of German, as you know.
Nico Schlotterbeck was asked about this at this Dortmund fans forum, and he was that they touched on the it was organised by Sky, so they said about Schalke versus Mönchengladbach is the Topspiel, and he went, oh, they have Topspiels in Schalke, do they? Immediately endearing himself to the Dortmund fans. But it will be a really big game, because they're two of the biggest games, two of the biggest clubs of the region. Schalke's first home game back. They feel they're a bit hard done by Köln last weekend, with an early goal chalked off by VAR correctly. A red card given to Dominic Draxler on VAR correctly. But, you know, they showed a decent amount. They have Jordan Larsson, the son of Henrik, who's a really good striker I really like, who's come out of a difficult spell where he was at Spartak Moscow. He's had to move on from there. He scored goals in the Russian Premier League. He looked the business. He's had a short loan back in Sweden. I think he could be an interesting pickup for them, as could Alex Kral in midfield. But Borussia Mönchengladbach have had a great start to the season. They won 9-1 in the DFB Pokal game. They beat Hoffenheim 3-1 last weekend. You've got some of their good players signing new contracts, which wasn't expected. So you've got Alisson Player's going to stay. Jonas Hoffmann, who does a great job for Germany, breaking from midfield, score goals. He's going to stay as well. So it feels like Farke has brought a really good feeling that they didn't have through a lot of last season with Adi Hütter. So I think it will be difficult for Schalke, but it will be a proper game. The problem is, of course, normally with Germany, we go for sausages, some nice roast meats or whatever. I think it's going to be way too hot for that this weekend. So, look, go for a Bockwurst if you must. Have a bread pretzel. Have lots of cool liquid refreshment of your choice. A nice side order of some homemade sauerkraut.
Actually, the problem when you're talking about Farquhar is you're competing with Delia Smith there.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.